League of Ireland Late Night in partnership with Rocksure on Off the Ball.
Well, if Daniel Kelly won that header, you clip that and you save that in the Shelbourne folklore.
League of Ireland Late Night, live every Friday from 10 on Twitter Spaces.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening. You're welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. We've got Conor Byrne joining us on the line from London at 7:30. He's preparing for the trip to Croke Park this weekend for the Christie Ring final. They're up against Derry in the decider at 5 o'clock on Saturday. There's also a heap more to discuss in the race for Liam McCarthy and the season as a whole in hurling. So Richie Hogan's going to join us in studio, as he always does on a Thursday, from 8 p.m. And then from 9 o'clock, we're going to be hearing from Hamer Halgrimson, who is speaking to the media at Abbottstown today, ahead of the Senegal and Luxembourg games. And John Giles will chat to us about the 1975 European Cup final, when Leeds United were screwed over in Paris 50 years ago yesterday is the anniversary. 0879 180 180 is our number if you want to drop us a WhatsApp message. Cameron Hill is back. How are you, Cameron?
Hello, how are you?
Very well. And Nathan Murphy is here as well. How are you, Nathan?
How are you?
You've spoken to John Giles about the 1975 European Cup final a bit. It never lessens in the madness of this game. Just watching it back earlier on YouTube, I mean, it was daylight robbery, an absolute disgrace what happened to Leeds United on that occasion.
I have watched back this game and a few of the Giles era where there have been horrible and, you know,
suspect moments.
I think it's fair to say all of the referees involved, officials, are probably dead at this stage, so I'm not sure we can libel them. But, dear God, the corruption. Because, again, the footage is somewhat grainy, so you end up slowing it down and going, sorry, is he not about 10 yards onside there? Or, wait a second, did he not just decapitate him with that tackle and no penalty was given? Or, wait, is he not 5 feet away from the guy who's just dived to the ground? It is obscene,
yeah,
the things that happened in the sort of 70s, particularly late 60s, early 70s in big European games.
Yeah, like the 75 European Cup final, for people who aren't familiar with this game, there are two moments of note that Leeds United fans, even today, still are unhappy about. Yeah. Alan Clark getting fouled by Franz Beckenbauer, which should definitely have been a penalty. But the most egregious one is Peter Lorimer's goal that's ruled out for some unknown reason. And it was only kind of today when I realised actually the referee running back to the halfway line to consult his linesman is actually a dead giveaway of how stupid the decision is. Because if the linesman is giving an offside, he would be standing in line with the defenders, right? Rather than being back to his position, ready for kickoff. So I'm sure that's been commented upon before, but I'd like to think that in 2025 I've discovered something new.
But all, well, you should throw it into the online world and let the conspiracy theory deepen. Like, there is such a serious aspect to this as well, that this is a European Cup final. Mm. Like, the prestige of winning a European Cup final for, you know, John Giles, one of, if not our greatest ever footballers, who achieved pretty much everything in the game, but didn't win a European Cup final. To get to that level and to cap that great Leeds team, we probably speak about that group and we speak about John in an entirely different way if they win that game, which they deserve to do.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I'm sure it gets thrown at them from Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea, Villa fans, you know, champions of Europe, you'll never sing that. But the truth is, they do sing that, and champions of Europe is very much part of your vernacular as a Leeds United fan.
Yeah, indeed. We decide that no matter what BAR, Beckenbauer assisted referee, would say on that day.
Oh, he's been sitting on that for.
Wow.
That just came to me there. I'm that witty.
That's your best work.
Thank you very much. Yeah, here we go. What, 4 years into it? Leeds have no shortage of European heartbreaks over that period, especially with that great team. And that was like the culmination of all those sorts of heartbreaks on the European front. Like, Revy was gone by that stage. I don't think Leeds reach another final for another 20 years after that. So, with the League Cup in 96. So, that did feel like the end of an era. The 80s were not especially kind to Leeds United.
Well, watching back some of Duncan McKenzie speaking to Danny Kelly on Under the Moon, is that the name of the TV show? He was saying that, first of all, he wasn't happy to be left out of the squad that day, that it was a Don Revy team that was sent out there, you know, as a tribute to him from Jimmy Armfield. And he also mentions in that interview with Danny Kelly that Don Revie was asked to lead the team out. I don't think John Giles agrees with that version of events, let's just say.
No, is this... well, it's not spoiler alert, because when I spoke to him, I might have been on the 40th anniversary when I spoke to John, and I put the quote, I hope John went with the same line. He said, "Who said that?" Which, in John's tone, which people will hear later on, I said, Duncan McKenzie said that. I listened to the recording earlier. Duncan McKenzie? Wouldn't believe that in details yet. I was like, What a cut down of Duncan McKenzie.
That is the most cutting thing that John Giles can utter towards you.
Like, the one question mark about, obviously the refereeing was horrific in that final, and there is a long list of woe from English teams who were screwed over, which would imply that everybody else was up to dirty tricks, but the English were just beautiful people.
Dates back to 66. They never let it go, the rest of Europe.
Yeah, well, also in that same game, I mean, there's an absolutely horrendous challenge from Terry Orath on Bjorn Andersen, whose career basically gets ruined as a result of that. He was in hospital for 4 weeks as a result of the injury he sustained. He gets taken from Paris, gets brought back to Munich, and he's in there for weeks and weeks, and his career is never the same, and it's... I think Beckenbauer is one of the only people on the pitch who actually notices this and kind of says to the referee, like, I mean, he absolutely took him out there. Mm. Like, when you look at a match report from 1975 and there's been a 4-minute substitution, you know something has gone badly wrong. And Terry Orath, it's just a sickening challenge on Bjorn Andersen. And maybe the referee was just trying to even it up.
He's gone quiet on the old BAR now, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Don't remember that one. it's been a tough couple of weeks in terms of, obviously Leeds are gone back up, but Sunderland won the playoff final, and my dad was saying, out of the two teams, I would have thought Sheffield, you wouldn't want Sheffield United to go up, and he said, no, Sunderland, 73, never forget them.
Of course, yeah.
So, yeah, tough couple of weeks after what should be a euphoric moment for Leeds United, so spare a thought for us.
Yeah, for sure. The news round is here with you thanks to UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. And you are starting with football this evening, Cameron.
Yeah, Seamus Coleman and Sammy Smodix are out of the latest Republic of Ireland squad, both players dealing with injuries following the conclusion of the Premier League season on Sunday. So Andrew Moran has been added to the squad for those upcoming friendlies against Senegal and Luxembourg. Ireland boss Hamer Halgrimsson says it's a blow not to have the experienced Coleman around.
He is a leader in this this squad. And you cannot... You cannot have his experience in many players. So it's just his experience, his leadership skills is one thing, but his quality as a player is another thing as well. And been playing at the highest level for such a long time. So it's a shame for me and, of course, the national team not to have him around. But hopefully there will come another time for him. Hopefully he will just use the off-season and come fit and flying. I know he's going to be at Everton. That's in whatever role, maybe a little bit more leadership role. But it's for him to answer if he is going to continue playing or not. Is his decision. But I'm hoping, and I know the Evertonians are hoping he will continue playing.
Does more leadership role mean coaching role?
That's what we're all wondering. Mm. David Moyes hinted at this as well, that there would be some step towards a coaching role for Seamus Coleman. Like, Seamus, I think, is openly raging against the dying of the light and, like, does not want to end his playing career and has always got quite angry when you would suggest the retirement question for club or country. So I would feel that he's missed so much football over the last few years that he would want to keep on going. And again, that carrot of a potential World Cup, you'll know by Christmas where we are. So why stop now? You know, if he can play and be around the first team squad for Everton and still training to a high level, you know, I'm sure if he felt he was being a bit part player, he wouldn't want that either. But I think he would back himself to, if he could stay fit, to force himself into the squad.
Yeah, it would be a fairy tale if Ireland qualified for the World Cup on a multitude of levels.
Let's make a long list of the reasons us qualifying for a World Cup would be a fairy tale.
Yeah.
As like the injury obviously puts a different complexion on it, but between Halgrimsson and Moyes a couple of weeks ago, like, they seem to be seeing some writing on the wall here and are talking him off a figurative ledge.
Well, in saying that, he was in the squad when it was named 3 weeks ago, so he obviously by then was intending to keep playing. I don't I don't think this was a one last night against Senegal at the Aviva and we all wave them goodbye. And the fact that they are allowed talk like that would suggest conversations have been had of him moving into some form of a coaching role. Because I've said to you before, I interviewed him the last day of last season and he hadn't signed his contract and I put it to him. There was reports in the paper of similar to this, oh, it might be a coaching. And he was not happy with the questioning. It was, no, 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 I'm a player. That's all I'm going to be. There will be no coaching involved. I am, and I want that right back spot. So maybe there's been a slight shift. I'd like to see him hang around. I don't see any reason why he needs to retire. I know maybe the injuries are getting on top of him and there's a frustration and all that, but you know, someone of his character, I think we'll keep him around as long as he wants to be here.
100%. Carla Ward's also been speaking today, Cameron.
Yes, so the Ireland squad are in training in Istanbul ahead of tomorrow's Women's Nations League game against Turkey. So Katie McCabe, who won the Champions League with Arsenal last week, is involved. She's linked up with the squad earlier in the week. Now, Ward kicked off her tenure with a 1-0 win over Turkey back in February before a 4-0 thrashing at the hands of Slovenia. But midfielder Megan Connolly says the squad have put that tough night in Koper behind them.
Yeah, I think we're over it. I think it's something that we definitely will learn from, and I think we already have tried to learn a bit from it. That's football. These things happen, and if you're not playing your best football, if you're not on your game, you're going to get beat by teams. And it was kind of a wake-up call that, yes, while we're trying to implement new things and kind of change our style of play and grow, these things can happen, and we have to make sure that they don't happen again. So I think while it wasn't a nice result, we have to learn from it, and I think we're taking key points from it at the minute.
Yeah, like, it was obviously the first window in this Nations League campaign for Ireland, and the Slovenia result is the most memorable one for all the wrong reasons, but they were scratchy enough against Turkey the first night as well, so this is by no means a gimme in the first of these two matches tomorrow night.
No, I think there's an inconsistency in performance that has been creeping in for quite a while now off the back of the playoff defeat. Things haven't really got massively better, and I think that result is going to hang over this team until they have a landmark victory that means they've fully kicked on. And it does feel that results have lingered and the disappointment has lingered, and Carla Ward seems to bring it up all of the time of the disappointment of not qualifying for the Euros, and like, that's going to be front and centre over the next few weeks when we all start tuning into what happens in Switzerland. So they just need some wins, they need some momentum. Hopefully a few players are discovered, but as we said last night, this is a transitionary period that could be a long one.
Yeah, it certainly could be. So tomorrow at 6 o'clock, Parky Cueve as well. That's a 6 o'clock kickoff on Monday, right?
Mm.
Yeah, so those are the next two fixtures, the concluding two fixtures to the Nations League campaign. Big news for the League of Ireland today, Cameron.
Cork City, they've confirmed that Republic of Ireland international David Myler is the new assistant manager of the men's team, former Republic of Ireland international, I should say. So the ex-midfielder is returning to Turner's Cross, having most recently worked as a development coach at Championship side Hull City. He started his senior professional career at the Leasiders in 2008 before securing a move to Premier League club Sunderland later that year. Former Dundalk manager Vinnie Perth was on the LOI pod today, and he believes it's a shrewd appointment on a multi due to France.
We live in two different worlds now. One is full of cynics, or the other one is people who are brave. And appointing David, in one sense, some will question, and others will say it's a very brave appointment. I think it's a really good appointment for the simple fact is, I know David's been away for a few years. I presume this means he's moving back, obviously. And I think he'll have a certain amount of local knowledge. Jared won't have that to the same level, obviously. So it's just a sharing of workload. I haven't seen him, or nor has anybody seen him really coaching. So that'll be the interesting part. Where are you at? What level he's at? There is this fear from some lads that somebody with a lesser name and all this rubbish, get you who you think is best in. And Cork need to do something a little bit different. And hopefully something like David's appointment can bring a few more people back in the journey, because they need Turner's Cross rocking.
This is great for Cork City. This is great for the league, Nathan.
Yeah, another big, recognisable name. David's name was in the mix for the job itself before Ger Nash was appointed, and clearly Ger Nash was first choice. It's a big life move for David. He's obviously been living in England since he moved over as a teenager to Sunderland. I don't think he's ever been shy about his ambitions to get back to Cork. It feels like everybody from Cork who's involved in football has ambitions to get back home. And I've no doubt that somewhere down the line, he'd love to manage Cork City. Like he retired very young. Was he 30 when he retired with that horrible knee injury? He's been coaching with Hull's underage teams over the last few years, and I know he's sort of put his heart and soul in it. He's cut back in his media duties completely because he felt this was the next stage in his career. So, yeah, interesting to see how it goes. Cork are obviously in a heck of a relegation scrap at the moment with Sligo. So the work starts immediately tomorrow night, live and off the ball.
Absolutely. Should mention as well, the Republic of Ireland versus Slovenia is Tuesday night at 6 o'clock, not Monday at 6. You're going to the rowing next, Cameron.
Very nice. Yeah, Fintan McCarthy and Conan Patzaya are through to the semi-finals in the men's double sculls at the European Championships in Bulgaria. They finished second in their heat this morning to advance to tomorrow's action. Tokyo bronze medalist Fiona Murta won her heat in the women's single sculls in Plovdiv today, while Mags Kramen and Zoe Hyatt have qualified for the A final in the women's double sculls after they also secured a second place finish in their heat. Jake McCarthy is through to the lightweight men's single final after he advanced earlier today.
Now, on rugby, what have you got for us?
Well, James Scaisbrook has been named as the new Ireland's women's defence coach ahead of the Rugby World Cup. The former Bath and Exeter Chiefs flanker succeeds Hugh Hogan, who unexpectedly left the role earlier this month. Head coach Scott Beaman has named a 37-strong preparation squad this evening. Two uncapped players among that selection, so Balbriggan's Alma Atagaman and Connacht player Ivana Kiripati are in the extended squad, as is back row Aoife Wafer, the Six Nations player of the tournament, has been recovering from a knee injury, which ruled her out of their final Six Nations game against Scotland, while Maeve Dealey is also in the squad as a training panellist. And just to mention, Luke Littler plays Gerwyn Price in the semi-finals of Darts' Premier League tonight. In fact, they've just gotten that match underway. The other semi-final at the O2 in London involves Nathan Aspinall and Luke Humphreys. Both matches are the best of 19 legs.
Nathan's like, why is this so deep into your script? Why was this not
this
top story?
Has to be top story. If we get a repeat of Littler or Humphreys from last year when Littler had the 9-darter to win it, one of the great nights of darts. It's sort of a perfect, you know, the summer is really starting when those dark nights and the first few weeks of the Premier League when it was the best thing on TV on a Thursday night, whereas now we're just an avalanche of sport at the moment. Yeah. And it sort of trickles to an end. Like the first few weeks are the best weeks of the Premier League. I think there's going to be about 20,000 people there tonight. Littler's sort of broken every record of how many nights you can win and all that sort of stuff. So I'm getting behind a Littler Humphreys final.
Is the Premier League darts much inflated compared to a few years ago? Like, it starts the same time as the Six Nations and it's still going. I thought it lasted around the same time as the Six Nations.
No, there's 18 regular nights.
That's back in my day when it first started.
That's why every time they go, nobody has ever won this amount of nights before. It's like, nobody's ever played this amount of nights before.
It's obviously something that's really working and it's been a massive hit.
Well, you cannot get tickets for love nor money. It's my 12-year-old's birthday this week and this was the dream to go to the O2. That or go to Liverpool. Like, his dreams are lofty. Tickets that things are impossible to get. Liverpool on the final day of the season or the Premier League darts at the O2, both of which were impossible to get tickets for. Premier League darts in Dublin sells out in 2 minutes. It's the day it goes on sale, it's gone.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be waning in any way. In fact, I think there's a real desire in Ireland to get a second darts event, get the World Match Play back, get something down in City West or some other venue that people can go rather than just the Premier League. But every single night of it is a complete sellout, despite the fact it's the same 8 guys playing every single night of it.
But is that the reason why it's been so successful? That there is a familiarity to it?
There is a familiarity. I just think it's taken on a life of its own. It's a night out. It's a bit of crack. Yes, you couldn't really sell it out if you were saying, oh, God knows who's going to turn up this week. But you've Littler, you've Humphreys, you've Van Gerwen, you've Price. You're guaranteed 8 of the biggest stars.
And is the sense that last year and this year, the Premier League has just gone to ridiculous new heights because of Littler, or what did it happen?
I think darts in general has gone to new heights because of Littler. You look at the increase in prize funds for the World Championship. They're increasing the number of players for the World Championship as well, which, again, World Cup style, will it dilute the quality? It means it's going to end up starting probably a week earlier. You're into round of 128. We're waiting longer to see the best players play. But like, Littler is having that Tiger Woods style effect on the sport, whereas the rising tide is lifting absolutely everybody. And I just wonder how quickly it gets to a stage where, you know, his people realise, okay, Premier League darts, yeah, maybe my fee might be slightly different to everybody else here.
Or like a live style breakaway, Luke Littler on his own,
just playing whoever comes along on a given week. And is the sense that like your son will go into school now tomorrow and everybody will have been watching this previously? Has it got to that level of like football-esque?
The problem they have is it's obviously quite late at night, so it doesn't finish till near 11 o'clock. So they're losing the youth audience.
Oh, no. Is that not, is there not that added guilt edge that it's like, I also stayed up late for this?
Oh, well, there will
such
be.
A prestige.
There, tonight might be an exception, you know. This. School's coming to an end quite soon. Summertime's arrived, the birthday, let him stay up. But no, there is that. I'm sure there's a few who come in and like, I stayed up to watch the big one. Oh. I think he was allowed to stay up the night of the Dublin one just to watch on TV. But it doesn't finish till about 11 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah.
But he tunes in to, you know, the league every morning on a Friday.
Does he, yeah?
To get the results.
Yeah, as we all do. So Phil will have your...
Sits by the transponder.
Yeah, Phil will have all your darts news tomorrow from 7:30. Do you want to give us the tennis scores before we wrap up, Cameron?
Yeah, yeah, busy day at the French Open. So men's world number one, Yannick Sinner, is through to the third round. He beat French veteran Richard Gasquet in straight sets at Roland Garros this afternoon. That brings to an end Richard Gasquet's illustrious career. Another men's seed fell today after Kazakhstan's Alexander Bublik came from two sets down to win 3-2 against ninth seed Alex de Minaur. Sixth seed Novak Djokovic is currently two sets up on Corentin Moutet, while in the women's singles, second seed Coco Gauff progresses after beating Teresa Valentova by two sets to love, while seventh seed Madison Keys eased past Katie Bolter in straight sets.
We actually do have time just for maybe one or two more bits and pieces, because I know that there's plenty of golf news happening today as well, and I know Leona Maguire is just on the course.
Yeah, she's just teed off her first round at the second major championship of the LPGA season. That's the Women's US Open in Wisconsin. A Lim Kim of Korea out in front on 5-under at Erin Hills, while Shane Lowry is four shots off the lead, in fact, on day one of the Memorial in Ohio. So he carded his opening round in the last few minutes to sit on 3-under par. It's Ben Griffin out in front and the clubhouse leader on 7-under.
Ben Griffin won last Sunday night on tour, his first individual win. Brilliant, interesting story. Quit golf 3-4 years ago, went back working, I think it was an insurance company, and eventually found the love again and has two wins, won the team event as well, and is back. No Rory McIlroy is probably the story of, it's one of these signature events. We thought all the best guys would show up all the time. But Rory is taking another week off. He's going to play the Canadian Open next week ahead of the US Open.
Yeah, so Rory McIlroy will come out from his hibernation, his media blackout.
It's very, I think it's talking to some people who were there this week, everyone's finding it a bit strange that like this was the best sporting event of the year. He should be in the honeymoon period, and then you have this weird USPGA where he ends up not really being a factor, not talking to anybody, doesn't do any media, then he doesn't turn up at the signature events.
Yeah.
It's like we need more of him.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get more of him in the next couple of weeks. Nathan, thank you. You're going to be with us for the football show after 9 o'clock tonight as well. Cameron Hill, thank you for tonight's news round. We're going to be chatting London Hurling after these. Richie Hogan's to come between 8 and 9 here in studio. Before all that,